Welcome to Agent Blue, your comic book explosion podcast. I'm Michael Bonanno.
And I'm George Green.
And in this show, we're going to take an in-depth look at a bunch of comic book topics, such as issues going on, and in this case, movies. Thor Ragnarok just came out, and we're going to give our thoughts and things that we have based on this movie. And we will be discussing what we saw and what we would like to see, as well as, from my end, a little bit of religious experience and what this movie contains and how we can teach you more. All right, let's begin.
So if we want to take a look back at the movie's source material, just strip it down to its deepest, just base sections. You know, they take a lot of different aspects from the comic books into these movies, especially because this universe is now becoming so vast. And a lot of the material for Thor Ragnarok was really derived from the Planet Hulk series, on top of some of the newer God of Thunder comics that have been released, a part of Marvel Now.
As well as a little bit of subtle changes to the story of Thor Ragnarok in the comics, and how that actually played out. For instance, in this universe, it's Hela instead of Loki causing the mischief and Ragnarok in this case. And also, whereas the enemy of Ragnarok, the comic, Ragnarok in the movie, the villain wasn't attempting Ragnarok. She was trying to overthrow and control.
And ended up causing the events that took place for Thor to make the decision to let Ragnarok happen, knowing that Hela's powers came from Asgard.
See, where that happens in the movie, in the comics, what would happen is this is a regular thing that happens for millennia. The gods would grow old, and Ragnarok would happen, and they would recreate themselves as if like a phoenix, being born out of the ashes of their newly dead bodies. And this would happen. The reason this was such a big deal in the comics, however, was due to the fact that in all of the times, in all of the rounds, this was the first time in which Thor would be banished to another planet and then end up being involved in their affairs, such as like what would have just happened, the Civil War story. It became such a big deal that Ragnarok needed to be focused on by the Asgardians.
If we're going to dive deeper into the movie, it kind of starts off as a bit of a toss-around, because in the beginning of the movie, you find that Thor is currently held captive by Surtur, who wants to cause Ragnarok. So by portraying the story in this sense, it really gives a new light on, I think, how Marvel's trying to take things, especially with their movies. They're trying to make it a little bit more vast. You tell by each movie, they add a wider array of characters. They are really getting their storytelling down to a point where they can just start throwing things in there and everything gets a lot more in-depth.
Well, they kind of have to, dealing with the fact that we do not age like comic books age, and therefore we need to be ready for our time. So we need to start getting new characters in. Hence the reason why we now have Spider-Man. The reason why we are getting deeper into the Asgardian mythos and all of that. If you noticed, I know you have, I don't know if you at home have, Betteray Bill is in Sakaar when you're about to see them fight, you know, Thor and Hulk. When you're about to see them fight, you see Betteray Bill's head. That could be a nod to a potential one day having Betteray Bill in that universe. You have all these changes, but the changes just lead to more potential stories from the comics.
That's right, because if you know about the comics, Betteray Bill and Thor have a short bout where they end up fighting each other, and Betteray Bill ends up having Thor's hammer in that fight, and Odin sees that Battle Ray Bill can wield Thor's hammer, and, you know, they're both worthy. And Odin's thinking to himself, like, okay, we can't have two separate Thors. So I'm thinking that just by showing his head, they kind of make a nod, like, okay, potentially Battle Ray Bill could make an appearance in these movies as a potential replacement for Thor in this new universe that they're creating.
Because at this moment, we have all these iconic characters, and seeing them leave will hurt, especially since they've been around for almost 17 years. They've been around since the beginning, since 2008 this world has been started, and now that, you know, people are getting older, their contracts are being up, they need to start adding the newer, younger characters. Thank God that we now have Spider-Man in the MCU, being able to continue the stories. As for we're going to be getting new Avengers, again, due to this whole thing.
Another major aspect of the movie, Thor ends up on the planet Sakaar, where they tie into the Planet Hulk storyline. At this time, Thor lands on Sakaar during his fight with Hela, as both him and Loki are rising through the Bifrost to get to Asgard. Hela ends up pushing Thor and Loki out at different times, and Thor wakes up in a junk-type planet, kind of like how in the Planet Hulk story, how Hulk ends up crash-landing on Sakaar. Thor is also picked up by a bunch of locals, and they begin to entrap him. And then he is actually the first time you encounter Valkyrie in the movie, and she is known on this planet as Scrapper 142, which is actually a reference to the first appearance that she made in Hulk 142. So this kind of does throw a bit of comic book knowledge in there without you even realizing, especially if you don't know the source material.
For instance, there is, we have the Grand Master in Sakaar this time, and it's his domain, but in the comics, it's the Red King. And a parallel does happen in which we have the overthrowing of this kingdom. But the difference is, where Hulk remains on the Thor aspect and continues, Planet Hulk, the comic, actually has him become the king of that area and the Master Champion. And it is quoted somewhere that this was the only time that Hulk himself actually felt peace. Until, of course, you know, bombs occurring from Avengers stuff causing his family to die.
The bomb that exploded in the Planet Hulk storyline was caused by the Quinjet that Hulk crash landed on the planet Sakaar with. Meek actually ends up messing with it somehow to cause it to detonate, but you don't actually find that out until later in the story during the World War Hulk storyline.
And because of the fact that it was the Quinjet that brought him there, because of the Illuminati and Avengers, that is the reason he thought to himself it is their fault and why he went all Worldbreaker Hulk, heading back to Earth to essentially get his revenge, and the rage of Hulk begins.
But now as we come back full circle, back to Thor Ragnarok. So, after Thor is picked up by Valkyrie, they are taken to the Grandmaster's lair. And this is kind of where you first see the Grandmaster's powers in the Marvel Universe. Hulk ends up sitting next to, I believe it's the Grandmaster's cousin. And the Grandmaster just ends up pointing his big old staff at this guy and melts him right in front of Thor. And Marvel, in their typical fashion, use that as a big comedy piece for Chris Hemsworth to just really blow the acting out of the water at that point. But then you notice that Loki is also there with the Grandmaster, and they have a short little talk, and Thor finds out Loki's been on this planet for a couple more weeks than Thor has. So he's kind of all out of the loop right now, being thrown out of the Bifrost like that, kind of screwed up their time frame a little bit. The story continues, and Thor ends up in the arena, getting ready to fight The champion.
They didn't say who the champion was, but as viewers, we know it's the Hulk.
And when he's moving and he is in a holding area, this is where we first meet Korg and Meek, who were in the original Planet Hulk comic. And they're a little bit different characters in the movie than in the comic. Meek's a very small, baby-like creature.
Very meek.
Very, very meek, yes. But he has blades for hands, which is a little cool aspect. And Korg looks like your typical Cronin. I know in Thor the Dark World we meet a Cronin already, and the Cronin in that one is much larger than Korg, so I would really like to see some sort of explanation, because the body shapes of both of them kind of make it seem like maybe they're close in species, but they're not the same. So I'd really like to see how they explain that in the further movies, if they decide to explain it at all. So to continue, the arena opens up and this big spectacle arrives. Thor still is unaware that he's going to be fighting the Hulk.
Once the Hulk has actually arrived and breaks out of his barrier, Thor is very excited to see him, but Loki jumps straight out of his seat, very afraid, knowing that last time he saw him, Hulk smashed him. Pun intended.
And in this scene is another part from you see in the trailer where Thor is very excited to see his friend Hulk. And this is actually a small reference to the Planet Hulk storyline, where it is Silver Surfer and the Hulk who actually meet each other in this arena. And Silver Surfer just kind of says, Hulk, you know, you're my friend. We don't need to fight. So it was a small nod to that. And I like when they do little references to the comics like this. Because
unfortunately, Silver Surfer belongs to Fox and those guys over there, so we can't really have that occur. But it is a good and nice nod to what actually occurred in the comic.
In my opinion, the Marvel Universe won't really be complete without at least the Fantastic Four. I would like to see the X-Men.
Well, they are the first family of the comics. The Fantastic Four are the first family. The characters in the comics that brought superheroes to light. Before that, we only were allowed monster comics, horrors, if we wanted to do it. So we won't really feel complete without the first family, but it's a good nod, nonetheless.
And let's hope they keep the small comic book references, and maybe we will get the Fantastic Four one day. But till then, we can just hope. But to continue, the Hulk doesn't really know who Thor is, doesn't really remember Thor, because he's been the Hulk for so long. Bruce Banner is just kind of pushed inside of there. In the movie, Bruce Banner does references being trapped inside the Hulk as the Hulk has the key to the car, and he's locked in the trunk. So Bruce Banner is not really in there as much as you would assume he was in there, especially from the last two movies, you know, Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron. So they go at it, and they just kind of, you know, do their whole typical comic book two heroes fighting kind of thing. No one really gets a clear winner, but this is the first development you see of Thor's new powers in the movie after losing Mjolnir. Thor kind of gets his godlike thunder going.
Without the help of Mjolnir, because of course they had to have the stereotypical, the power was in you all along moment.
So the fight continues between the two big shots in the Marvel Universe at this time. And the fight ends with Thor getting ready to throw the final blow and the Grandmaster setting off his inhibitor that has been embedded in Thor's neck, rendering him unconscious. And the kind of screen goes black and it fades into a new scene where you see that Thor is in this room with Hulk. It looks like it's, you know, Hulk's bedroom, really.
It would appear so, seeing that all of the people have their own containments. Otherwise, they would be able to rebel, which, of course, as we've said, will happen. But then they have a conversation talking about you know, what's going on, and really showing you exactly how much the Hulk has grown.
He kind of, since he's been the Hulk for so long, the Hulk's got a little bit more swagger now than you've seen before in the movies.
And it's affected Bruce himself. When he returns to being Bruce after he's able to calm down, you see that he's not the same guy where he felt like he was more in control during Avengers, but here you see that he's definitely not himself anymore. He's been removed from society for so long that he's no longer the same Banner.
As the movie progresses, Thor and Hulk meet up with Valkyrie, who's very resistant in joining them on their quest to save Asgard. And as you find out later in the movie, Valkyrie is actually one of the people that Odin sent to try to stop Hela the first time she tried to take over Asgard. And they ended up wiping out all of the Valkyries, and Valkyrie ends up being the only one left.
Hence the reason she really doesn't want to fight this battle with Thor, because of the fact that she saw what had occurred last time they fought. And she knows if the only Valkyrie were to stand up, she could potentially end her life. It'd be a suicide mission, in a way. And so she doesn't at first want to help Thor. She kind of brushes him off, only really caring that she's supposed to be taken care of and helping out the Hulk, because she was the one who brought them here.
Right, and then after that fact happens, Valkyrie kind of storms off, and Thor ends up just leaving, and he doesn't want to stay there anymore. So he breaks in his inhibitor collar and jumps out the window. And as the movie progresses, Hulk follows him. Thor is actually able to calm the Hulk down to get him to turn back to Bruce Banner. The movie pans out over to the Grandmaster talking to Valkyrie and Loki, and the Grandmaster is asking them both to find Thor and his champion, the Hulk, who is currently Bruce Banner. And, you know, Loki is like, oh, I will find them, you know, just kind of doing his typical Loki thing. Can just do anything. Nothing would make him happier than to just ruin Thor's plans.
That's all he wants to do, is mess with Thor. Little bit of sibling rivalry, little bit of I'm way too powerful for the rest of humanity.
So as the movie progresses, Thor talks to Heimdall. He knows that Heimdall can see him. And Heimdall ends up telling him that this planet that he's on is surrounded by wormholes, kind of like the wormholes in like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but a little different. They don't look so techy. They're just kind of like a dump hole. But Heimdall ends up telling Thor that he needs to go through this biggest hole to get him back to Asgard so that he can help Heimdall save the rest of the Asgardians from Hela and her undead army. So Thor is talking to Valkyrie, and she tells him that there is a plane, or there's a ship on this planet that can survive going through that wormhole, and it's the only ship on the planet that is going to be able to survive this. So Thor and Loki go and try to locate this ship. And in doing so, like you would expect, Loki tries to trick Thor and turn him into the Grand Master. So he does his cloning of himself, leaving his hologram behind, and tries to alert the Grand Master. But Thor's a little bit smarter now, realizing that Loki kind of does this a little bit too often.
All the time. He's one step ahead of Loki this time. Loki does this a little too many times, and so he knows what he's doing. Even when he's hanging out, they're trying to get to the next level, they're in the elevator, and they're finally talking, and Loki realizes, oh wait, I'm the problem. Thor still knows that Loki himself will not stop. He's still a constant mischievous child. And so, even though he's finally working alongside, he's aware that Loki might do something.
And the Marvel Universe, you know, Joss Whedon and all of them, like to use Loki as a bit of a prodding tool. He's like the ugly stepchild, if you want to put it in blunt terms. He's always going to be around. He's always going to be the one that really starts all the problems, but he's right there alongside you, making you think that he's helping you out. But
like
really,
a middle child.
You know, he's really just looking to ruin your day. So they're definitely going to be keeping him around for a little bit longer. And as you see in the movie, later on, Loki gets his wide eyes because he ends up seeing the Tesseract down in the vault where Odin kept all of his little trinkets. Also where the Infinity Gauntlet was, but Hela describes that as a fake. You know, she pushes it over. You know, it doesn't exist. You know, she was looking for the Eternal Flame to give her the power to resurrect her army. But we know now that the Infinity Gauntlet that was in the chamber down there was not the real Infinity Gauntlet, that Thanos actually does have his gauntlet.
It was a fake one in the chamber.
Yeah. So we've known that for some... we've kind of hoped that for some time, because there was two Infinity Gauntlets floating around, so they definitely needed to try to fix that.
A lot of people thought that there was going to be, like, two gauntlets going around for a while.
Which, I mean, you know, with Guardians of the Galaxy 2 introducing Adam Warlock, it would kind of make sense to have two gauntlets. Because in the Infinity War comic book, Adam Warlock does end up taking the gauntlet from Thanos. But if there were two gauntlets already in circulation, it would kind of make it a very interesting fight. Because in the comic books, there's only ever one gauntlet. So if you have two superpowered beings with two gauntlets going around, it would have been pretty cool to see. But unfortunately, you know, we're not going to get to see that this time.
I also believe that would be way... way too much crazy for Hollywood. If we have what is in comic books and they, you know, filter out a lot of the crazy stuff, why would they add something even more crazy, as in two of the things that can cause
the end of the known universe?
Completely. Just,
you know,
like,
just
rewriting the whole
complete thing. Annihilation. Just a Ragnarok for the whole universe, really.
Exactly.
If you want to get technical here.
The MCU's own Franklin Richards.
Pretty much, yeah. Just destroy it all.
We don't
need it. I mean, it would be a very good contingency plan. You know, this universe is all sorts of messed up. Let's just scrap it, start over. Two Infinity Gauntlets, they go at it, everything explodes, everyone dies, white light, new people. Boom.
Just like Ragnarok. However, the fact of the matter is, Hollywood would never do that. No matter how awesome that would be.
It'd be too much of a spectacle.
Well, every comic book universe has that type of character that can reboot the universe with their own will.
And we already know that eventually it's going to end up happening.
With the MCU.
They've already introduced Scarlet Witch, who potentially has the ability to do this.
I actually really want to see them do, like, a House of M storyline. I know they can't because of the fact that it's not... That would be mixing all of the universes. But, like, if we could see something like that occur, like, with all the new characters that are coming out,
would definitely be a good show there as well. So to get back to our main topic, Thor Ragnarok, we leave off with Thor and Loki trying to get off this planet. They finally get this ship, and we have Thor, Valkyrie, Loki, and Bruce Banner. And on the whole ride of the ship, Valkyrie and Bruce Banner, they don't actually know who each other are, because like we said, Hulk's been Hulk for about 2 years now, so Bruce Banner's never come to light, and Valkyrie has met Hulk many times, so
but
she can kind of see the similarities, but she, you know, she's not sure, and they keep referencing, like, oh, I think I know you,
you know?
You look familiar, and, you know, knowing that in this movie, Mark Ruffalo does not only the motion capture for the Hulk, but he also does his new... let's call it the child voice that Hulk has. He's kind of like a two-year-old, just, you know, a lot bigger and a whole heck of a lot stronger. So he does have a bit of speaking skills, so she could kind of see the similarities in their voices.
But it wasn't until Hulk jumped out saying, "You do know who I am," and becomes the Hulk, that they realized, oh, wait, it's the Hulk. I've known him for a few months to a year or so.
So to continue, Thor, Valkyrie, and Hulk leave the planet Sakaar. They leave Loki on the planet as, you know, they should have in the beginning. And they travel through the wormhole. To pan back to the planet, the overthrow happens. All the planet's inhabitants, which ends up being a few of the characters that you've seen before in the movie. You do see a couple of Ronan's goons down there on Sakaar, helping the rest of the planet take over
and regain control.
And regain control.
Once that happens, the Grandmaster actually says, "Well, congratulations, you have overthrown me, and honestly, I'm the biggest part." Like, he tried to take ownership of the fact that he allowed them to have an overthrow just to save face. It was much more of a comedic movie than the last two Thor installments.
Which was a bit of a troublesome part for me. I really did like the movie, and the special effects have never been better. But I feel like Thor would be more of a serious character, especially being teamed up with the Hulk. They kind of have the two of the biggest, like, burden-bearing characters in the Marvel Universe, except for if you really want to go into, like, depth of, like, Black Widow. Them two right there kind of have... They kind of get the worst of it. Thor is supposed to be a king, but he was banished, and he's just been going through a whole lot since we saw him in Age of Ultron.
I mean, the first movie itself was very Shakespearean in tone. It wasn't as funny. There were a few funny moments, such as, "I like this drink, get me another one." Mm-hmm. But it was very much more of a serious tone for the first two. However, this one was much more comedic. And I don't know how people would have taken it if, Guardians of the Galaxy wasn't such a success. It was that type of movie, and I feel like that's what they were going for when the director sat down and started it. He was definitely doing it much more of a comedy. They actually got a very, comedic director.
Right. I mean, and in adding to that, the DCEU has really taken a very serious turn on the comic book movies. So I think Marvel is going to try to stick to the more lightheartedness, because I know a lot of the Batman v Superman reviews kind of talked about how dark the movie
was. How gritty
it was. And it was just very gritty, which, I mean, I do enjoy a lot of that, but I also like the lightheartedness of some of the other comic book movies out there. So it is nice to see a bit of a balance between the two. But now Marvel's really working on its lightheartedness, and we're going to be seeing Thanos here soon, and I hope they get serious enough, you know, for at least one movie to really show Thanos' true power, because
this whole movie coming up is going to be essentially a bloodbath for a lot of Marvel characters.
Right.
A lot of actors' contracts are coming to an end, and therefore a lot of these characters are going to die. But they've moved so much in that lighthearted way. How are they going to take it when these characters actually die?
Right, because now we're getting so deep into it. You know, these characters are making you laugh. They're really getting you connected to these people. And in the beginning of Thor Ragnarok, he talks to Surtur about how he took a two-year span to try to find the Infinity Stones, and all he found was death and destruction. So I guess that's a really good foreshadow of what's going to be coming next for the MCU.
Well, I mean, they thought that the vision that, you know, Scarlet Witch had given was a, foreshadowing event to Infinity Wars. You could have saved us, Tony.
Right. I mean, I'm just hoping they can really pull it back full circle. Especially for the fans' sake. Because you can really see now, after Thor Ragnarok coming out, people are giving it very good reviews. People are raving. It's a very good movie. But there also are more reviews coming out now saying, okay, this movie is a little lighthearted still.
It's a great movie, but a little too lighthearted.
A little too bad. They took a bit of too much of a comedic turn. So I hope they really can wrangle it in.
It honestly makes me wonder at the very end of the movie when you see them heading to Earth again, because Ragnarok had actually taken its hold. Thor won and Ragnarok occurred. Hela lost. And
a big old sword just kind of stabs right through the face.
But
you see
the outcome of it. Like, the homes are destroyed. The ones left are the ones left. And Thor, with an eye patch, is now the king again. He has to make the set rule. And heading there with, this lighthearted tone. He may have been brutally beaten and now has an eye patch. But it's still left on a lighter heart tone. Especially with the realization of Loki remembering, they don't like me on Earth. And Thor's going there with me anyway.
Well, I mean, if you paid attention to the after credit scene, I really don't think that most of them are going to be making it to Earth anyways. Thanos' ship just kind of rising up behind this ship that Thor had commandeered from the Grandmaster's inventory of vehicles. This ship that they have not only is holding all of the Asgardians, but a few of the characters from Sakaar that end up following Thor over to Asgard to help save with Loki. So they took all the Asgardians off this planet, so it is a very large ship. But then Thanos' ship just kind of dwarfs this ship in size, and it really shows the ominous tone and the sheer power that Thanos holds over everybody. Everything that he has is going to be bigger. Everything that he has is going to be better. And it's really going to make for a spectacle, especially coming here soon when we get a hold of Infinity War.
We have covered much of everything else. All right, well, within the story, there's not much specifically Jesus. But if you look back throughout the entire Bible, there is a lot of stories this can relate to. Now with the fact of all the Asgardians being on the ship heading to Earth, you get the sense, similarly to the story of Moses leading his people to the Promised Land, with the dark, luminous figure still looming over us, being Thanos in this case, being Pharaoh in this story of Moses. You see it with that. And knowing the story of what's happening in the MCU as a whole, you really see that here, knowing that this enemy has been around and has been causing a bunch of problems. And now that we have this movement into the next place, we're going to see the end result, the deliverance of these characters to what happens next in the story. Of course, in the Bible, it's, we get the story of the walls of Jericho, and what continues on leading up to Christ. But in this one, we're going to have, here's the Israelites, and they're going to be fighting, the Asgardians will be fighting Thanos with the rest of the Avengers, who are disassembled at this time, thanks to the events of Civil War. So there's that really, it's really good fit in that story. And so that's what I saw, a lot of that. We see Thor's Hulk with fight and all that, and it's really just one-on-one. I would view that as, here's the champion being Moses as Thor, and the Hulk being part of the Egyptians. But in this case, they've fought, and now they're on their way to the next portion of the story.
I mean, I think with that, I'm pretty sure we're just all about wrapped up for this discussion. Keep it tuned on us. Next up, we're going to be reviewing the Justice League movie that's going to be coming out here in a few days, which, I mean, I can't wait for.
Neither can I.
I have a lot of predictions for this movie, and I'm going to keep my tongue tied here at the moment.
We will get deeper into that next time, because this one was all about Thor Ragnarok. Again, I am Michael Bonanno III.
I'm George Green.
And this was Agent Blue, your comic book explosion podcast. Tune in next week, and we'll see you around. Peace.